Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here. Brent Lebrot is actually out, but that's okay because we've got not only a special guest, but someone who's quickly become a great friend of mine. I'm super excited to have you here. It's great to be able to talk to you. It almost feels like not an interview. It's just going to be a regular conversation that we kind of have on Thursdays sometimes, and I'm super pumped about it. So how are you, Julius Wachinski?
I'm good, man. Everything's going well. I can't complain. Everybody's happy and healthy, and that's really all I look for. Everything that happens outside of that is just extra.
I love it. I love it, man. Really quick, let me just knock the you know, regular stuff out of the way here. This is Season 3, Episode 5, Interview with Julius Wachinski of Method Canine. For those of you guys who listened to our interview with Stephanie Wachinski, Stephanie and Julius are husband and wife. They own Method Canine and operate it together, and Stephanie just couldn't stop raving about Julius being the secret sauce behind the success of Method. Obviously, Stephanie's an amazing dog trainer in her own right. We knew that going in, but ever since we've done the interview, I've been seeing nothing but really high praises from really good dog trainers that have, you know, gone to Method in the past, what, like 2-3 months? And have been just talking about how just moved forward, how progressive the training is, and how you guys keep things on its toes.
Well, we try to keep it that way. And that, you know, when it comes to the training, it's really really is all Stephanie. I mean, I really have very much to do with that. I understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, obviously the fundamentals of it, but I always make it really clear with anyone I'm speaking to that I am not one of the dog trainers. I come in and assist. I mean, sometimes you have dogs that are male aggressive, and so they need somebody to come in. Dogs that have issues with men with hats, heavy set men. I mean, I fit the bill for all of that, so, you know, I'll get the phone call, but I really am the guy in the chair. And I like to be that way. I like to be the support. So whatever they need to make their day go easier, I'm the guy that gets the phone call, and it's good like that, because my area of expertise is on the business side of it. So that's where I feel most comfortable.
Well, and that's exactly why we really wanted to talk to you, because I'm sure you can, or I guess you know firsthand, that dog trainers on average don't tend to have a level of business expertise and entrepreneurship that really holds them back. I mean, you and I have been talking a lot about it. You've been giving me lots of great advice, right? And I wanted to cover a little bit about your background as an entrepreneur, and then from there, we'll kind of get into your role within Method and just kind of create a whole past, present, future.
Sure. So I've always wanted to work for myself. I've never done exceptionally well working for other people, with a couple of exceptions. But I, as a child, the concept of making money and the concept of being able to, you know, supply things for myself was kind of thrust upon me because our family was very, very poor and, you know, kind of just was what it was. My parents got divorced and we moved from New York to Pennsylvania, and there wasn't much to do, wasn't much to have, because there just wasn't a lot of resources. So as a kid, I decided that, you know, how do I make money? So started out with just selling candy bars at school, going to, you know, what was Sam's Club, at the time, buying candy bars for like 30, 40 cents and then selling them for a dollar and just doubling my money over and over and over again. Then I opened up a couple of concession stands that I worked with through our community, and that worked out really well. We had a couple different places. So I didn't actually open them up. They had the resources there, but I ran them, and that was very successful. Moved from there to a couple different jobs here and there, kind of feeling out, you know, my youth and what I wanted to do. But then I started tinting cars, and it was really exciting. I did it well. People, you know, appreciated the product that I was producing, and that was the first more legitimate business, Total Effects Tinting and Detailing, that I had. Then I moved out from Pennsylvania to Idaho and did a couple things and went to work for a movie theater while I was in nursing school, and fell in love with it. Absolutely fell in love with it. And then worked my way all the way through the ranks with that, till finally I had some vested interest in it and was able to start making some decisions and doing some things, you know, autonomously. But the owners that I worked with were just phenomenal, giving me a chance. But I started there taking tickets and cleaning the floors, and then bloomed up to running it. And we were able to make that very successful. So everything that I've done in my life has really been geared towards, you know, going into a business, learning that business, and then being able to, you know, find the areas of opportunity in that business and how to actually, you know, save money and make more money and, you know, going from being, you know, an employee to a business owner really gave me, I feel, you know, a great opportunity to know that one of the things that most companies do is, you know, deal with their payroll. You know, payroll is the thing that we need to cut. Payroll is the thing that we need to manage, because for most companies, that's the most obvious, you know, controllable expense. And I've never been one to cut pay. I think that once you get quality people, you just, you know, keep investing into them. And there's other areas that you can, you know, reduce waste in order to be very profitable and keep your staff happy. Because really, a happy staff is your happy clients, and that's how you stay in business. But for me, yeah, I mean, that's where it was at. I didn't want to go to college for a degree. Just straight up, I don't feel that there's a great deal of value in having a piece of paper that says I know what I've been able to prove that I'm able to do. Because it's not just that business, but we've helped a lot of different businesses over the years, you know, be able to be more successful. And it's just something that, you know, dealing with other business managers, dealing with other, you know, owners that were struggling, and then helping to try to breathe life into their business. And so it was a nice and easy transition, as far as that was concerned, into this role here, because we do a lot of business coaching. It's not something that we have on our website yet, but we have put together an entire package for that, because so many of these dog trainers have come and said, I'm struggling and I just don't know what to do. And it really is for a lot of them just trying to figure out some clarity. You know, when you start laying out, well, this is what you're actually spending versus what you're making, I think that's probably come in the most handy.
And it's funny you say that, because I think that's how you and I had connected, was when we were talking to Stephanie. You know, I was asking her, like, what, you know, Julia sounds so vital to building a dog training business. And I know that you guys do train the trainer type, you know, 5-day seminars, right?
Right.
And I think I was asking her something along the lines of, does Julia's have like a course on that? Is that part of the thing that somebody can, you know, build as part of the curriculum? Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, but he's thinking about it and so on. Right. And then I was like, oh, everybody just bother him. Right. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting background, because it kind of runs people through the gamut of how many jobs sometimes you work in until you kind of find what it is that you really like. I think there's also a lot to be said in there about being comfortable starting small, right? Like, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with going to a movie theater and starting off as like a ticket taker and so on. And I know that these days it feels like a lot of people don't want to be that person, as if there's anything wrong with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They just kind of want to jump into the big role and say, I'm in charge. But for me, anytime I've ever worked in any company, even when I was hired into like a management style position, I found it incredibly important to work all of the jobs. I actually, you know, if you're bringing me into a business in order to help figure out where the waste is, I have to have a mastery of those, or at least a very good understanding of what those roles and responsibilities are, so that when we, you know, actually look at the numbers and say, where's the opportunities that exist to, you know, get rid of the waste, or where there might be a need, you know, where are we missing those opportunities for sales because there's an area of the company that's deficient. We have to be able to understand that. And you can't understand it if you don't actually know the jobs. So regardless of whoever I ever brought on in any business, if they were coming into a management position, they were forced to work all of those, you know, lower jobs, or, you know, more simplified jobs, so that they've really understood what was going on. So even with like the cleaning of a movie theater, there was a process, and you needed to be efficient with that process in order to be able to, you know, get the theater, you know, cleaned out in order to keep the numbers up, so you're not wasting a lot of time between shows. And so simple things that needed to be done weren't being done. So people were bringing in a vacuum cleaner and hooking the vacuum cleaner up and doing a lot of additional work that was unnecessary. So I went from that to saying, we just need to have a leaf blower and blow everything down to the front. So in some theaters, you'll actually go in and see that. But then it was also about customer experience. And so, you know, we said, well, and we've held this mindset ever since that, but it's got to be about the presentation. Regardless of whatever you're doing, you have to be in a position that whoever you're working with, whatever the client sees, has got to be as perfect as it possibly can be. So sometimes you have to sacrifice bottom line in order to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies aren't willing to do that. But when we backtrack and say, if we know every job and we understand, you know, what it takes to make the whole you know, the whole business work, then we're able to really effectively make, you know, quality decisions that are going to improve the life of not just, you know, the manager and hopefully improve the bottom line, but really improve the quality of life for the people that are working with you, because the employees are so important and so many businesses miss that. If you don't have happy employees, if you don't have people that you're actually investing into where they feel that they have not just value, but they have a deep level connection, then you wind up losing them. And, you know, retraining a new employee is super expensive, and there's a lot of different things that go into it. If nothing else, other than the trust factor, being able to really trust somebody to do a job and be able to present in the way that you want them to be able to, you know, in the manner in which you want the customer to receive, you know, their experience. Because regardless of whatever you're doing, that's what it is. That customer experience, you know, how was it? And if you want repeat business, you need to make sure that it's ideal.
Sure. Sure, and so, that it's very positive and that it's cohesive is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Everybody plays according to the same rules type thing.
That's right.
I want to backtrack just like 2 minutes, because you were saying something that I thought was really cool too, was you have higher level management people or would be higher level management people work the more entry level jobs before they become active as a manager. Absolutely. And it's cool because there's that, like, just for people listening, from the dog training side of things, there's a really similar work your way up type mentality and dog training. A lot of people who seek mentorship and all that kind of stuff typically, or at least used to, you know, and we'll give this advice typically, you should reach out to somebody who you want to learn more from and offer something of value, like, hey, can I scrub kennels for you in exchange for some of your time, right?
Right.
And being the person who's training dogs or running the company or whatever, it's very important to know, actually have, you know, having done, like, how, you know, what does it look like to scrub a kennel? What does it look like to wash a dog that's had an accident? What does it look like to do all these different things? And it's a double-sided approach, because if you do that, like you were saying, not only is there a kind of accountability factor, like, listen, I know what scrubbing kennels looks like. I'm really good at it. I'm really quick with it without cutting corners. So I know how fast roughly you should be, right? Absolutely. And maybe there's like a 10%, you know, I understand that not everybody is like, this isn't your business and maybe you're not super motivated with it as I am. So if I took 30 minutes and you took 35, like, fine. But there is kind of a middle ground there of, look, I know what this entails. You didn't need to do these extra steps, or you didn't do these other steps that you should have done, XYZ. But on the flip side of that, there's also, there, not to sound all touchy-feely, but there's also like an empathy factor there of,
yeah, there's an emotional component, and we have to be, yeah, absolutely. And on your specific point, people who you hire are never going to embrace the business as if they're the owner, unless you give them some ownership. So when you start hiring out people and wanting to understand that, that emotional component is ultra important. So when we hire someone at Method Canine, one of the conversations I have with them very pointedly before we get into anything else, money, you know, roles and responsibilities, the first thing that comes out of my mouth is that if you come to work with us, you are working with us and not for us. Your life outside of work matters. Your life outside of work is the most important thing. The job is something that helps you to manage your life so that you're obviously, you have financial resources. We want you to have a happy place to work, but this is not the priority. And I think people coming into, you know, our Method Canine family, that's something that really resonates with them. And because then they know that it's not something where, you know, we've had employees that, you know, they had children and, you know, sometimes the kids were a little sick and whatnot, and to explain to them that, you know, you're never going to have to worry about losing your job as a result of your kid being sick and you needing to be able to stay home. That's something that you can give to, you know, an employee, that's not attached necessarily to a dollar, but that peace of mind for people is just, you know, mind-blowing in a lot of ways, because a lot of times that's the concern. You know, what happens if my family needs me? What happens if? And to have that peace of mind that you don't have to worry about that. If something takes place, if there's an issue or whatever, we absolutely understand and we'll work through it. But the same level of commitment that we provide to you, we absolutely want in return. And that's a very even trade for people, because, mm-hmm. you know, peace of mind is something that you really can't buy. So,
and I would say, too, for the younger trainers out there, I tend to think, to an extent, peace of mind, like, I know it's not fit, like, literally, but it can be kind of attached to a dollar value. And I'll give you an example. So McKenna's almost done with school. My wife has been in PT school since I've known her. It's been like 6-7 years, right? when we met, she was going to Orange County Community College, and she's done in December, finally.
Awesome.
And we've had this conversation like a couple weeks ago where she was asking me, hey, so, you know, if Banner Health or whatever is willing to pay me, you know, $90,000 a year, let's say, and, you know, and I don't know, some other clinic is willing to pay me $70,000, but I've heard from people who work there, because I'm doing clinicals, that they're happier there than they were at Banner.
Sure.
Would we be okay with me working there for less money? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Because, yeah, absolutely. You know, $20,000 is well worth you coming home happy.
Sure. Right?
So just something to consider for newer trainers out there. Like, obviously, we get it. You've got to make ends meet. But sometimes if the job is stressful, then reconsider, right? But that being said, I know from all of the conversations we've had that you take your role within Method Canine of, you know, keeping staff and operations running smoothly very seriously. And I guess I just want to hear you unpack what exactly that role within Method is.
Sure. So really it is, it has to do with the, you know, everything from onboarding, you know, a new employee, finding them, you know, putting out the feelers. Everything that we do, though, is really centered about the quality of life. So it's not just quality of life for us, but for the potential hiree. And we've offered a lot of times things that most people wouldn't, you know, expect. So, you know, when we were hiring out for, like, for instance, for a receptionist, I put out a feeler for that. And sometimes people's expectations are really, you know, not on par with what you're thinking as an employer. You have to look at that very realistically. So I put out an ad for a receptionist and it, you know, just general stuff, answering emails, you know, the phone, very, very simple stuff. And it's an entry level job. And I was getting people with salary requirements for $90,000 wanting to answer my phone. And that's a bit absurd. You know, the interview process for something like that was really difficult. I remember one lady in particular, I had offered $50,000 a year plus a company car, and that wasn't good enough.
Wow.
So then I changed my ad and I put it to, you know, glorified answering machine. And then our current employee, Carrie, who's turned out to be just a wonderful friend, one of our best friends, just a wonderful person, super responsible. She came on the entry level position. I think we gave her a little bit more than what we were initially offering for that post. But I think in the course of 2 years, I think she's gotten 4 or 5 raises since then. You know, she's got another at least 20% on top of what she initially was offered because she proved her value. So, yeah. You know, when it comes to handling the employees and making sure that they're getting, we never have a problem dipping our hand into our pocket. But I think for anybody that would do any type of onboarding, it you know, as well, I think it's easier to, you know, explain, look, we have this kind of structure set up so that you can, you know, onboard and have, you know, some level of expectation of what you're going to be making depending upon performance and things like that. And that's a little bit higher level stuff than what I should be talking about right this second. You probably just want the general, you know, roles of responsibility. So let me back up a little bit. The way that our day-to-day works with Method Canine and what my responsibility is, it's really the back end. So I handle the payroll, I handle, you know, the employees, I handle dealing with the state, dealing with the taxes, dealing with any type of issue that might actually come up. So when we start talking about, you know, if there's a problem, I'm the guy that gets the call. If there's a tech problem, I'm the guy that gets the call. I handle all of our marketing. I handle all of the initial client interactions as far as like whether or not we're going to be servicing, you know, clients. So somebody contacts us for board and train, you know, we have our onboarding process for that, our vetting process, and then I alone handle 100% of those phone calls. Now, the reason why I do it that way is to make sure that all of the information that the clients receive is uniform and complete. So there's key points that I'll hit along the way to make sure that everything is, you know, done in such a way where it's all recorded. I know they've gotten the complete picture, and then we just let them make the decision. We never close like a traditional company would. But then again, if there's an issue, if somebody says, hey, look, you know, I don't remember talking about that, then it comes back to me, and I, you know, my responsibility to get that squared away. Now, typically, we don't have those issues, which is really, really great, but sometimes they do come up. The other day, we got a letter from the IRS. I actually have it sitting right here. So not to exaggerate, but it was telling us that it says, This is a notice of intent to levy your property, and your rights to your property is notified before our records show that you have unpaid taxes for the period of December 31st, 2020. I handled this, and just so you can see how much it was, $27.38. And from 2020. So those problems that come up, I mean, that's just like a wonky thing. It's $30.
Right.
But we get this letter and we've never heard anything about it. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that comes to my table in order to immediately fix. And that's just part of doing business. So every once in a while you get something weird like that, that'll happen. But it comes to me. The value of having that person, the, as Stephanie says, the Julius, is because her time training the dogs is so valuable. We don't want to take that time away from her. You know, our other trainers and other people, everybody's got their role and responsibility. So me being in the position to be able to just handle all of those one-offs, because there's a lot when you're running a business of this size and you have the clientele and the base and everything that we're dealing with, there's a lot of plates spinning. So it was never my intention to be in this kind of a business. I've always been doing something for myself. So to kind of go from the traditional role of me being the breadwinner and my wife, you know, having something that she was doing, to completely reversing where, you know, I'm talking to you from home. I have a home office. I'm the primary caregiver to our child. I bring her to school, pick her up. You know, I'm the one doing the laundry and stuff like that. In addition to, you know, running the backside of the business, it's a huge, you know, social dynamic switch for us. But it's been a great one. I really enjoy being the backup to my wife and being able to make sure that her day is set up for success. And when there are problems, I do enjoy, you know, getting the phone call. Not necessarily always dealing with the issue, but certainly, you know, being the one that's it's going to fall on my shoulders to fix.
Sure.
So
you don't like the IRS threatening to take your facility over $30?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know. It's so shocking to see. And, you know, of course, my wife gets the mail over at the or our office manager gets the mail over at our facility. And Stephanie calls me up and she's just like, we just got this letter. And, you know, she wasn't freaking out, but it was more of just like, it's $30. What happened?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I got a hold of our accountant and, you know, they got it paid and squared away. But yeah, some of those things, though, to a new business owner could be really shocking. And, you know, if you've never dealt with that and the headache of it and whatnot, somebody that's brand new in the business, and we've gotten those phone calls before, I just got a letter saying this. A matter of fact, I just have, and I won't disclose their name, but I have a dog trainer that I've known for many years get a hold of me because they went to a client's house to work with the client. And they had never worked with the dogs before. They literally just walked in the door. And they walk in the door. They sit down. The dogs are on the floor acclimating to everything. So they haven't even touched the dogs. Nothing's taken place. And the dogs got into a fight. And the bigger dog broke the little dog's leg. The trainer had nothing to do with anything. And they wanted to sue the trainer because the trainer was physically there. And so they called me up really, you know, upset about it and sure. Kind of shocked. And, you know, I had to walk them through that entire process and, you know, just give them some peace of mind and saying, you know, if I'm a plumber and I come to your house because you want me to fix your sink and a pipe in the wall breaks, that's got nothing to do with me. I didn't do that.
Right.
If I haven't touched
anything yet.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go on like that. And you know, I'm happy to help with any of it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. The legal side of it is an interesting thing. We did an interview with a friend, Paul Slattery. He's an attorney in California, and he was talking about the value of like knowing best practices, making sure you've got a rock solid contract. So that's definitely the kind of thing that if you guys are doing already for other trainers, then great. And if not, should consider like helping with a, you know, like a generalized contract with some really important clauses
actually.
In it.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. So if a trainer was to come to us, what we've historically done, it's not something that we really publish, although we are, you know, the program that I'm putting together is going to be really from start to finish. It's going to, if a new trainer is like, I want to be a dog trainer, our company is putting together, or it's almost complete, a full certification program. So people will be able to get certified at different levels, be able to be trained to do exactly what we're doing on the higher level of training where they're physically coming to us. We're working with them. It's a legitimate certification course by us. But on top of that, for what I do, the business course is going to be from start to finish. How do you build your LLC? What kind of insurance do you need? How do you protect yourself? How do you contract with people? How do you get the you know, the clients? And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more as we get into you know, our conversation. But it's going to be a start to finish, you know, kind of turnkey scenario where, with the exception of actually getting you the clients, which will be part of our program, because our goal is to certify people to such a high level that they're going to be able to tap into our client base. So we're very excited about that all coming up. But on the smaller end, so somebody just starting out, I just want to train local dogs in my community, you know, this and that, getting people set up for success and starting them out on the right foot. All of that's going to be included, including contract language. So we'll have a sample contract that's basically our contract. We've spent a tremendous amount of money on it over the years, you know, modifying it, making sure that, you know, everything is squared away. And the contracts that we have, they're very kind of ironclad. I mean, it's there. Like, this is what it's spelled out. However, as far as refunds and stuff, we always reserve the right to give. I'd say... And we typically don't have people cancel. In fact, the entire time that we've been in this business, I think we've only had maybe 7 or 8 cancellations. All of them were due to a dog being, you know, unfortunately, like critically injured or having some issue. I remember one dog lost its leg after being bit by a poisonous snake. Some other dogs had passed away and whatnot, you know, prior to coming into our care. Like, they're scheduled out a few months and they call us up and say, hey, one lady, you know, her husband passed away. They've always been legitimate reasons, and we always give their money back, even though technically speaking, like the lady whose husband passed away, you know, technically the dog could still come. We don't have an obligation to do that. But morally speaking, we're not going to burn in hell over some money. So here's your money back. The only time I didn't give money back was a lady who 2 weeks before her scheduled appointment called us up and said that she wanted to take a vacation with her friends. Oh, I've got this great opportunity to go to Cancun or something. I need that money back so I can go. And it was kind of like, screw my dog, you know, who really has a lot of issues. I'll just put him down. That to me was insane. And I didn't give her a deposit back based upon that.
Did she end up doing the training since she already paid?
She did not. No, I mean, you know, she canceled the training and she didn't come, and we kept her deposit. And I was actually getting ready to give her deposit back. But then she raked us over the coals and, you know, and just made it really, really difficult. And so I chose not to at that point in time. And then we donated the deposit to the training of a shelter dog. So it wasn't like we were just like, oh, this is a windfall for us. We did something good with it. Sure. But, you know, atypically, we want to make sure that you know, that end of it, like you're talking about with the contracting and things like that for new new trainers, that they have those resources. And our contract is really good. Obviously, depending upon what state they live in, there's different rules and regulations. So we always advise them, you know, take this as the base and bring it to an attorney. You know, nobody's going to give you better information about what the law is than an attorney in your state. So find one. And we always advise them, get yourself a good multi-lines insurance carrier, get yourself a good, you know, attorney, and start everything appropriately so that you're not running into these issues. Because a lot of times the smaller dog trainers, I'll just do it myself and kind of, there's no contract, there's nothing outlying what I'm going to be providing. And then all of a sudden you have that client that's like, well, no, you didn't help me and I paid for this service. And, you know, nothing is drawn out to where you can say, no, this is the contract. We're operating within the four walls of this contract based upon what we've discussed. That's what we're doing and that's it. Because every once in a while you get those people that, you know, they just don't, you know, you've done everything that you said that you would do and then they expect more. Now, we also, you know, have things like we give lifelong service to people, you know, care afterwards to make sure that they understand what's going on. If they have an issue, we want them contacting us. And so everybody's going to run their business a little differently. But we definitely see a lot of new trainers struggling by giving too much away. And there's, you know, there comes a point, you know, time is money. And if you're giving and giving, that's great. But if you don't have the resources to do that, you know, having somebody in your back pocket like us where we can say, no, it's okay for you to say no, that's probably been one of the biggest comforts that we've found, that as far as feedback is concerned from newer trainers. I always felt guilty about saying no. And then we're like, you don't need to feel guilty about that. You don't need to feel guilty about, you know, setting up rules and setting up regulations and setting up, you know, these boundaries for yourself, because there are unfortunately people that'll take advantage of you. And then you have those cases where, you know, you want to put some extra time into it. Great. I mean, we've done that lots of times where, you know, my wife has absolutely fallen in love with a dog and, you know, the relationship we've had with them has been great. And you know, we've just given them that time. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think that new trainers, to sum it all up, that the value that they get, not just with us, but if they have, like you said, somebody that they know, somebody that they trust, that's in the business, with that they can talk to them and really have them be a mentor to them. The value to that is massive, because all of those things that you are going to run into that you're unsure of, they probably already have dealt with, and they have the solution to give to you. Because that unassuredness in any business, that'll destroy you faster than anything else.
Totally. And something I want to touch on is, if you were to put these things in, say, like, quick steps, somebody who's considering starting a dog training business, obviously the first step I would think would be learn how to train the dog.
Right? Absolutely.
Sure. What would step two be?
Well, if you're going to be training the dog, the step two, before you actually get into the business, if you haven't done it, you don't want to invest a lot of time and money into, you know, creating an LLC and doing all these different things, getting the attorney and having all of these expenses, if you're not 100% certain, because everybody is a dog trainer. You know, we've had people take our basic foundation course and a month later they're training dogs. And it, right. And that's insane to me. But you have to know whether or not you actually want to do it. Because a lot of times people are like, oh, I love to work with the puppies and the cute fun stuff. So, you know, the very next thing, if you say, like, I'm going to train dog, you learn how to train the dog, then I would start working with shelter cases. I would start working with local rescues. I don't know any rescue that wouldn't take free service or significantly discounted service. And the reason why I say do it for free is, if you do it for free, you're going to know whether or not it's a labor of love or not. And if you don't love this business, or if this business is just a means to make a buck, you're never going to be successful in it. Because the truth in what you produce, the truth in what you speak to people, resonates. The reason that we have clients coming from all over the world to us, and we've got just a little under 9,000 clients right now worldwide, and when we have people flying in from Australia and the UK and Belgium and, you know, Abu Dhabi and all these different places, the reason why is because anybody can say that they're able to do what we're able to do, but we prove it. And the biggest thing is when we speak to people and we make sure that they understand, you know, what you have to say about your dog, the relationship that you have with your dog, all of that matters, and that's our goal. We need you to feel better. If you're not truly invested in this kind of business where it's coming from your heart, it resonates with the clients and they will walk away. They're not going to be invested with you back. If it's strictly about making money, then a lot of times the training that the dog winds up getting is just, how do I cut the next corner? How do I make an additional dollar? And so when I tell people, and Stephanie tells people, go train at a shelter, go train with a dog that you have no personal relationship with, and not just the super cute fun ones, but, like, you know, some of the more difficult cases. We've had a dog here, you know, talk to them. Yeah, we've had, you know, Bobby here for 6 months and he can't get adopted. That's the dog you should be taking to go and help, because a trained dog over an untrained dog is always going to be more adoptable. You know, if you have two dogs that are side by side, pretty much the same, look the same, engage relatively speaking the same, but one is trained, walks nicely on leash, knows how to be polite, understands the marker words, understands what to do, why to do it, how to do it, and this one is untrained, that trained dog is always going to be picked over the untrained dog. So that's a huge thing. And then on top of it, not only is it a feel-good thing for you, it's a feel-good thing for the rescue. The rescue is going to go ahead and start referring you because, oh yeah, you know, Marion trained this dog or trained that dog. One thing that you'll find in the dog business, which I'm sure you could appreciate, is the amount of dog hair just floating around everywhere.
Yeah.
So,
well, sorry. Except in my case, it's McKenna's hair somehow.
Mine too. My wife, I actually have the dog, the doggy things that you throw in the wash for the hair. And don't do it for our dogs. I do it for my wife's hair. And I'm like, do you see, you know. But anyway, you know, again, not only is it a feel-good thing for the dogs and for the owners and for the rescue, but when you are able to back up and say, here's a rescue now that's well respected in the area, and that is another thing too, to make sure that you're partnering with, you know, legit companies or legit rescues, because not everybody is. Most of the people always have their heart in the right place, but make sure that you're going and saying, look, I want to be able to help you, I want to be able to make this happen for you. And then again, you're going to receive those referrals. You're going to know after, you know, 6 months whether or not this is real for you. And you're like, I love this. That's huge. Because if you don't, then the burnout is real. And people, again, who are in this just for a buck will experience burnout faster than anything else. And you don't want that to happen. So,
okay. So, excuse me. If we were saying step one is learn the training side of it. Like, know what you're doing, basically. Right. And step two, we're saying, is test your passion. Mm-hmm. Roughly speaking, what would a step three look like?
Then you need to establish your actual business. Because if you haven't done this at this point, you need to legitimize. So you need to work on branding, because now it's not just a matter of, you know, your name. You want people to be able to say, this is a legitimate company. This is a company that's, you know, licensed to do the work. So you need your business license that's actually, insured, because you need to protect yourself against liability and protect the people that you're working with and their dogs and everything. And a lot of that has to do with the contracting to make sure that, you know, waivers are signed. You need to really establish, a standard. So for us, I'm preaching that all the time. There's standards. And I tell people, you know, every time I have a conversation, one of the key points that I make is the standard that we set for the dog coming into our program is exceptionally high. But the standard that we're going to set for you as the owner is considerably higher. Because the dog's only going to be with the trainer for a short period of time. We need to make sure that you're set up to not just manage what we've done, but to be able to duplicate it. So when I'm not here, and you have an issue, because those things are going to come up, you're prepared to do it. So I would absolutely sit down and say, what is my goal? What are my standards? What are my expectations for the dog, for myself, and most of all, for the client? Because that's a key point in most dog training businesses, is they think that they're working with the dog, and they're not. They're working with the client. I need to just train the dog. No, you need to train the client. And that client connection gets missed, because you have a dog. Look, I've trained the dog. And, you know, truthfully, I've heard from so many dog trainers, well, I train dogs because I don't like people. Well, that's fine. But the people component is there, right? You have to be able to work with the client and make sure that the client is understanding. So making sure that whatever your program is offering, that the role for the dog and what the client expects is very, very clear. I'm training your dog to do this. But the role for the client is just as clear. I'm training you to be able to do this. Now, I've heard from some trainers, well, why would I want to do that? Because if they know how to work with their dog, then they're not going to come back to me. That if that's your mindset, you shouldn't be in the business. Because if your mindset is, how do I get them to come back, then you're lost the goal. The goal is to get that dog set up for success and to get them set up for success, to be able to put your stamp of approval on any dog. And I tell this to the clients as well. I want, and Stephanie wants, and our team wants, the service to be so stellar that their dog that came in for a reactivity mild to extreme, that anybody that saw that dog prior or anybody meeting that dog in the future says, I want my dog to be like this. Man, I wish my dog was like that. And for the very first thing out of their mouth to say, Method Canine, Stephanie Vichinsky, best money I ever spent. And then a lot of times, you know, even for the higher price things, like our 8-week board and train is $7,500. Our 8-week board and train is booked out until February of 2026 at this point. There's a reason for that. And the reason is because of the referrals. So, you know, the quality of what you're producing, what the client expects, and being able to deliver all that, you need to have that clearly written out and established. This is what I'm offering to you, and this is what the expectation is. So that by having those clearly defined rules and responsibilities, so again, not just what you're doing for the dog, but what the client's doing, you know, it's not just them paying you. I'm teaching you to be able to duplicate this. You want it to be perfect. And I think that that's a huge step that's missed. People just say, well, I'll just take all the business that I can. And I get that. I remember there was a time when Stephanie first started training dogs where, you know, she came running into the house and we didn't have any business cards or anything. And she's like looking around, she grabs a piece of paper and she scribbles her name and number on it. And she takes off and she jets down the way to a lady walking a beagle. The beagle's name was Knuckles. I never forget it. And the beagle was pulling on the leash and the lady was kind of frustrated. And then Stephanie is like, I can help you. And the very next day we got the phone call, and that was the birth of, you know, our business at that point. But, you know, being able to understand, like, again, those roles and responsibilities is super huge. Too many people don't do it. I'm like, well, what are you about? Like, I'll talk to somebody and start coaching them and say, well, what's your goal with the training? If I hear I want to make money, you know, I need to get paid, and I've heard that, there's not much else to discuss, because anybody can do this, you know, go work for a company, go figure out, you know, something else. And then it's just like a one and done scenario. You absolutely have to want to create real relationships, because we have clients that we've trained their dog 6, 7, 8 years ago who have referred maybe 10 or 15 clients to us. You start doing the math, that $75,000, $100,000 you make off of, you know, the referrals. So again, having your, you know, your mission statement kind of, I don't like calling it that way, but, you know, what are you about? What is your roles, responsibilities, and how do you want to ultimately be able to serve the client? That's too big not to hit very, very next thing.
Totally, totally. So just to recap it really quick. So we're talking learn your dog training. And let me say that again for new trainers. Learn your dog training. That should be step one. Duh. Step two, though, test your passion. Step three was legitimize the business. And then it sounds like step four is set a standard.
Absolutely. Right?
So let's do this. Sorry, I just want to take a very quick commercial break.
Sure.
When we get back, we'll continue this. Thanks so much.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world, ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com or visit our Instagram page at dogtrainerspodcast. Thank you, guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, welcome back. Thanks again so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. This is an interview with Julius Vichinsky of Method Canine. And just before we left, we were kind of summarizing some really important points for dog trainers or would-be dog trainers out there who are considering starting a business, right? And the reason that we really want to talk about these things is because, again, when we spoke with Stephanie, she had nothing but, we're talking like the highest, highest praise for Julius's ability to gain insights into the roles and responsibilities of what a dog training company should look like, and then help flesh that out in a way that trainers can understand and build a successful business with a really solid customer experience around it. And I kind of want to dive back in with, you know, we were going through like the beginning steps of what dog trainers should be focusing on and roughly in what order, right? I know everything's, you know, different and so on. But something that you've really helped me with, and I wanted to you know, get a little bit of your thoughts on, is just making yourself available or making sure that people in your local area are aware that you're even open for business. Because a really common question that we get from newer dog trainers to the podcast is, how do I find clients?
Sure. So it's a lot easier than what people think. But you know, everybody thinks that they have to dump a lot of money into advertising. So a company of our size, and I'm very proud of this, when we were assessed by an advertising firm a couple of years ago, they advised us that we should be spending no less than $150,000 a year based upon the, you know, the size of our business and, you know, the you know, net operating and whatnot. We spend about $6,000 a year. Most of that, and I've told this to you before, most of that's in donuts. At least half of it is donuts. So there's a great value to the old school way of like going and meeting, greeting. I mean, this dog training is a very one-on-one or very personal, interpersonal kind of business. So it's not like something where you're dealing with people over the phone or they're buying a digital product. You physically have to be there with the client in order to, you know, engage with them and teach them and all, everything that's associated with specifically what we're doing. So that understood, you have to have a face that's recognizable, meaning that you have to be out there. People need to know, oh, that's, you know, the trainer, even to the point where, like, you know, you have to, you know, be willing to wear your gear wherever you go. Everybody should know who you are and what you're doing, because that's your opportunity to advertise in a very inexpensive way. But I know I told you and I tell everybody, go get yourself some donuts. So, you know, if you find a local company that makes donuts, go in there and say, look, I'm a local business and I'd like to, you know, be able to do some marketing. I'd like to buy some donuts. And you could do it with whatever you want or, you know, however that ultimately works out. So you can do it with pizza or whatever. But donuts seem to be like the go-to item for me. Anyway, what we do, I'll go buy 30 or 40 dozen donuts. And then I will bring those donuts with me to the veterinarians, because the veterinarians are the ones that are going to say, your dog needs training. or the veterinarian is usually the first place that, you know, clients who really care about their dogs are going to go. And you know, they'll either talk to like some rescues or some other places or whoever they trust. But the vets are a great place to start. Now, if I go into a veterinarian's office empty handed, because mom always said, bring something, and it's the truth, there's no value to what I'm asking other than I want you to do something for me for nothing. Here's my business card. I'll train your dogs, you know, and I'm just going to be another business card that gets shoved in the drawer and that's it. But if I walk in with 24 donuts and I hand it over to the receptionist and say, thank you very much, and I leave and my business cards are just with that, that's going to be great. So I would create a here I am letter. Very short, very sweet, because their time is valuable. They don't have a lot of time to investigate into all that. I'd put that together with my business cards and maybe put that in a nice little envelope with a thank you. Walk in, here's some donuts. I just wanted to say thank you. Here you go. They're going to open up that envelope. They're going to see your business cards in there. They're going to see your nice little thank you very much. You know, I was referred to your vet clinic by one of my clients. You know, or I know that you're in the community and that you're well respected, and I would love to, you know, partner with you. And then you're giving them donuts. The reason why the donuts are so great is because the people who are working in that office, a lot of times, especially the receptionist, they're working there as a minimum wage job. I'm sure they feel appreciated. I'm sure they're happy. But even if they're not, whatever the case might be, they're going to feel thanked and appreciated by your small effort to bring them some donuts. And that's going to create a connection between you, who's actually bringing them, thanking them, saying, here you go, I'm not asking for something for nothing, I just wanted to show my appreciation. And then the person that walks in the door, which is unfortunately most of them, that's just coming in and saying, hey, I'd like to just drop off my business cards for you to hand out to get me business. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. There's going to be a huge difference. And I've actually gotten phone calls from vets after saying, hey, yeah, joking around with me. Yeah, we really need some donuts. I mean, your business cards, you know, and it's cute. But I knew that was working because of the way that we handled it.
Right. It made an impression.
Exactly. And the reality is the veterinarian is not going to be handing out your card most of the time. It's going to be that receptionist. So I want to make sure that the receptionist that's in there is being treated kindly and fairly by me and shown some appreciation for picking my card over the other person's card. Now, you have to be able to track it. So I always advise that if you are going to do something like that, that, you know, if you're printing out 50 cards to give to that veterinarian to hand out, that there's something on the back side of that card that designates that, you know, veterinarian. Another great marketing tool to do is give that veterinarian a specific discount, saying that as a client of ABC Vet, you're going to receive 10% off all services or a free evaluation, even though I hate evaluations, and we could talk about that later. You know, whatever it is that you need to get your foot in the door in the interim, you know, in the beginning, offer that out. You know, we're going to give you, you know, a free whatever, and have that loss leader in order to get the people in. But then you know they're going to have that card, they're going to reference that vet. And then you just work the numbers after that. I got 30 referrals from this one veterinarian. I'm going to dump more into them. I'm going to go invest more into them. And then, you know, you start doing the meet and greets afterwards where you go back and say, I would love to pay for a, you know, for a meeting with the vet. I'd love to pay for, you know, one of your times. Now I'm not asking for anything. If you're going to spend those advertising dollars, why not spend those advertising dollars having, you know, a 30-minute conversation with the veterinarian? Well, I paid for an actual vet visit with you. The vet's not out anything by having that time. It guarantees you a specific slot, and you're not feeling guilty. So you could just go in, say, look, I know your time is valuable. That's why I wanted to pay for one of these. I don't have any issues with my dog. I just wanted to introduce myself. You know, you guys have been referring a lot of clients over to me. Thank you so much. Is there anything that I can do for you to help you with your clients? Right? Mm-hmm. So that's helping you. I mean, obviously helping you, but it's such a great way to market your business and to provide a service and to get those referrals, because now you're actually meeting with the veterinarian saying, you know, I know you have dogs that come in here that are anxious, that are fearful, you know, that might have some reactivity and whatnot. And depending upon where you're at in the training world, you know, where you're at in your level of expertise, if you're handling that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I know that you know, you have a lot of clients. I don't handle the more difficult cases, but I would love to take on, you know, some of the entry-level stuff. That's where I'm at. Be transparent. Tell them what you're doing and where you're at so that you're the person that comes to mind. So when they get that cute little puppy and the person's like, yeah, I'm super excited, you know, I can't wait to get into training. Oh,
Sally comes in and she's wonderful, and you know, we've worked with her before, and you know, our clients love her, and then they're shoving your card in their hand. You haven't really paid very, very much for any of that. So I guess my point is that when you start talking about getting clients, there's more value to you being in person and having those personal connections than trying to get pay-per-clicks off of like Facebook and people that you don't know and have real no relationship with. You want to be able to establish that you are there to serve the client, that you're going to be taking good care of them, and have the word of mouth push your business. Because the reason that we have, again, people coming, you know, the first time that we had somebody come from out of state to us, they came from Colorado, and they were a referral for somebody that was local, but this was a family member of theirs that lived in Colorado. They're like, you know, you should totally come over here and have Stephanie work with your dog, and they did. And we were mind-blown by that. Like, you would drive that far. You know, we recently had somebody come out from Maine, and when they came out from Maine, they drove 47 hours one way, and they made that trip four times to have us work with their dog. That's a word of mouth. That's not coming from, you know. So, I definitely think that on the marketing side, you've got to be present. It's not something that you're going to be able to hire a company to say, oh, you know, put up a bunch of advertisements for me. I think that – I know you and I had that conversation, you know, and then my first advice to you was to cut your advertising budget in half and change it around. So I think that that's probably the most valuable advice that we give. And surprisingly enough, I mean, I am really surprised by how many dog trainers have come through our programs that when they did come for coaching – that they weren't doing any of that. They're like, you know, well, I send out flyers. Well, flyers are super impersonal. You can spend the whole day hanging, you know, doorknob, you know, nobody, I don't pay attention to anything that's hung on my door. I immediately, you know, trash it. And even to the point where, and maybe this is, you know, a bit cynical or sinister. If I see something hung on my door or somebody comes knocking at my door unsolicited, it immediately kills it. Even if I wanted to do business with them, I don't like it that much. So having those referrals, you know, I want grandma telling, you know, her best friend, you know, oh yeah, Sally helped my dog, you know, Stephanie helped my dog, and it was amazing. Word of mouth is going to be your best friend.
See, yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because I'm kind of petty like that too. And it is annoying a little bit, you know, and it's like, if you're going to put stuff on my car, and because then it also causes me a moment of panic, like, God, is this a ticket? Like, you know, I'll see something in my windshield or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and Or like the city, like there'll be a little hanger on the door that says like, hey, cut the weeds out, you know. So whenever I see something in the door, I'm like, what, you know? And then I read it and I'm like, no, I don't want window blinds, go away, you know. And for sure. So it's funny that you say that, because I'm like that too.
Yeah, there's a funny story about a company that got sued by multiple people in a community because they designed their door hanger to look like a shutoff notice. So it was red, and it had, you know, so people were coming home and seeing this on their door, and they were like, you know what, but it was forcing them to read it, and that's what they wanted. So they thought that was like, you know, going to be smart, and it just doesn't help. I'd rather go to one source and have that one source. Now you've got a credible person like that veterinarian, you know, or the office, you know, the vet's office, handing out your business card saying this is the person to go to. And we've been able to establish with many vets as their sole dog trainer, where they don't even hand out anybody else's cards. And they tell them, no, we have a trainer that we've aligned ourselves with. And that comes with that quality service over time. And we have like veterinarians in there's one guy in Philadelphia who his office solely refers to us. And they're in Pennsylvania. And he only refers to us. He doesn't refer to other people because he's like, this is where you need to go. And then, of course, having the services to be able to handle people that are not in your area. So some online services, Zoom, things like that, which we can certainly get into.
Well, yeah, so that was kind of my next point. But just before we move there, I think to your point, you know, there's vets that only recommend like certain people. For trainers listening out there, get comfortable with the reality that some are going to say no.
Absolutely.
And it's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine, right? Just take the card somewhere else, right? And a tip, you know, I don't want to give away like too many of the tips you gave me, because I don't know if you're kind of keeping those in your
pocket. No, it's fine.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, we're super transparent. We want everybody to be successful.
Yeah, great. Okay, so a tip that Julius gave me, which made like all the sense in the world and was super easy to do, was when you're printing these cards to take places, you know, I think it's a smart thing to do to like put the name of the business on it. But my first thought when I heard that advice was like, man, I've got to print like how many different series of cards at, you know, X amount of dollars per, versus print cards with a little white space in them, like a little white rectangle, and just write the name of the business in it 20 times on 20 different cards, you know, and
absolutely,
and do it that way, because it's cheaper than having to print like unique cards, I guess you could say,
yeah,
right? Because you can just write it in with a pen.
Absolutely.
Right? And that kind of thing works out super, super well. In fact, for people listening, if you know, Julius, I'm assuming you're okay with it, but just if you're cool with it, anybody listening to this, if you want to see the card that I had designed, you know, on Julius's recommendation, let me know. You know, email us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com, or, you know, dogtrainerspodcast Instagram, Facebook, blah blah blah. Probably Instagram. I'm really bad about checking the Facebook Messenger.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that.
And people can, you know, just to plug our own stuff as well, you know, if somebody did have a question, they wanted to reach out to us, we do offer quite a bit of coaching. And a lot of times, I mean, this isn't about nickel and diming people. If they have a simple question, I just answer it for them. It's not like we push everybody through the service. There's definitely a full business coaching suite that's going to be available where people can, you know, start from start to finish with us. But the reality is, if somebody's got a question or something, they can email me directly as well at Julius, J-U-L-I-U-S, @methodcanine.com, and we're happy to you know, get you going down the right path. If it winds up being something where they want like the full service, we can offer that. But we've been ultra transparent, and the reason why we do that is because we really want people to be successful. There's so many untrained dogs in the world that need help that there's room for everyone. Everybody that claims to be a dog trainer, you know, if you're gonna go down that road, we want you to be successful. We want you to be the best. We want you to have, you know, just a phenomenal business. And a lot of times, the only thing that's preventing people from being successful is their unwillingness to ask for help. And it shouldn't be that way. And a lot of dog trainers, we know a lot of them that like, why? Like, for instance, when we put together our muzzle conditioning video, we consider that to be a critical care service. That means that somebody needs that. Somebody that says, I need to muzzle my dog because my dog, you know, just bit somebody. That's not something, in my opinion or Stephanie's opinion, that anybody should have to pay for. And I could not believe when we had trainers reaching out to us saying, why are you giving this training away for free? As if there's not like a million videos out on YouTube already with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, why would you do that? Why would you give that away for free? You should be charging people for it. And that to us is so, you know, obtuse when it comes to what's really going on. We don't want it to be about the dollar. We don't want it to be so yeah, when you ask me, you know, hey, can I share? Absolutely. Anything I shared with you, you can share with other people, because we want that level of success to be out there. It's not gonna you know, infringe on our ability to you know, provide or do anything like that. We'd love for people to have that high level of education.
Perfect. And I appreciate your openness, and you actually brought up another good point, something that we had, I don't know necessarily that we like really fixated on this with Stephanie. We did a little bit because of the social media presence that Method has.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, that model of giving out detailed information, which ironically, because I know trainers push back on it, seems to work like all the time. I'm trying to think of an example when it's not worked. But a lot of the really popular trainers that I can think of right now online all have like long detailed tutorials on YouTube for free.
Sure.
Right. So the method is proven to work, but it is fascinating that a lot of people like get upset about it. Right.
Well, that's the difference between somebody that's in it for the dollar and somebody that's in it for the success. Somebody that wants to have that short term, I need to make money, and so everything I do, I have to charge for. They're not looking 2, 3, 4 years down the road. You know, when we built this business, you know, we had our short-term goals. We had to pay bills. You know, we had things that were going on and whatnot. But we never, and I'm very, very, very proud of this, we've never put the dollar ahead of the quality of service. If the dollar starts to be your guiding light, then you're going to miss everything. And I mean everything. So we've got to put the quality of the service, the commitment to the people that we serve, and the content of our character above everything else. We've got to make sure that when we go to sleep at night, that we can do so in a peaceful manner. We could say, you know what, God, we did the right thing today. And we're excited about that. And that's not to be self-glorifying, but that we can be at peace about it. You know, I don't ever want to feel convicted about a decision that we made because we said, you know what, no, we need to make money here, and we have to, you know, we have to do that, that's got to be that guideline. We don't want it to be that way. And we've been very blessed as a result. And I think that mindset resonates not just with, you know, the clients that we're working with, but anybody that we've ever talked to about the business, about, you know, what we're doing. So people that are in completely different businesses that just, you know, see us locally and they're like, well, what's it like to be in the dog training business? And we start talking about it. A lot of times they say, you know, well, can you make good money in it? And you know, yeah, you can, but that's not our focus. You know, at the end of the day, when dogs that are with us, whether it's, you know, a rescue dog that's being, you know, a free service that we're just taking care of, that we want to be able to get, you know, squared away so the dog can be adopted, or if it's a celebrity dog where, you know, they're paying the full boat and doing all that type of stuff, it doesn't matter to us. The quality of the service has got to be the same, and we really want that to be what defines us as a company. So yeah, so to that, I bring that up all the time because so many of the trainers that I talk to, that's the first thing that they want to do is talk about how do I make more money. And so some of the more in-depth business coaching that I've done is where, you know, I know that I'm going to do a coaching session with somebody, and we haven't charged for any of it yet, but mm-hmm. we are going to, you know, it's gotten big enough where that's appropriate because it's becoming a huge time investment on my side.
Yeah.
But that said, I remember one of the companies that I spoke to, that's what they wanted to talk to. Their contact form that they sent over to me or their email saying, you know, that we're just not profitable enough. How do we get there? And so I called their business over the course of a week in advance of my phone call with them every day. And not one time did they answer the phone. Every time it went to voicemail. And so when they got on, I said, well, you know, who's answering your phones? Well, we have so-and-so that answers the phones. Well, I called you every day. Here's my screenshot of my Zoom, you know, caller. Here you go. Nobody once answered my phone call, and I left a voicemail every day. Nobody returned it. So you're clearly not that interested in making money because, you know, the quality of that service is gone. But anyway, I know I'm kind of just rambling a bit, so...
No, the only as we talk about this, the delineation, I guess I would make, you know, it, like, the word in my mind almost sounds a little bit like a defense, I guess, for newer trainers, is I don't think it's always that, like, it's all about money in my mind, I don't really care about dog training. I think a lot of new dog trainers who want to start a business just, they think in very, like, generic everyday terms of a business, and they think, like, well, it's not that I don't think dogs should have access to a free video. It's that if I don't charge, how do I make money? And if I don't make money, then how can I run this thing? And so something that I've noticed that you guys do is you focus on the branding side of it, not like building a business side of it where you charge for every single little service.
Sure. And I would agree. So to be really, really clear, I know sometimes I speak really pointed and I do bring up the negatives about, you know, what I've worked with and whatnot, as far as people being really fixated on the money. The point that I'm trying to drive home is that if you're a new dog trainer and you want to be successful in the business, that can't be the focus. And so I understand the reality of needing to pay bills. I understand the reality of being, you know, in a position to make those ends meet. However, what we want you to focus on in the coaching that we always provide is you've got to be very real. And if you focus on the quality of the product that you're producing, the quality of the training and the presentation, the money will absolutely follow. And so the reason why I give that advice is because sometimes, and not sometimes, it's very easy to get fixated on that, not even intentionally, where it's like a greed issue. But like you said, I need to pay the bills. I need to make sure that things are going on. There's ways to satisfy all of that, but the long-term success comes from fixating on the quality of the service over everything else. So, you know, people who are struggling with how to, you know, to market and whatnot, there's lots of different ways, like we talked about, you know, the business cards and whatnot. You can go, you know, put on free, you know, or very inexpensive, you know, come to our day class for, mm-hmm. you know, for $10. You know, who doesn't have $10 and you do it in a park? So you don't have to have a facility. You go to the park. We're going to be there. We're excited about this. And always speak as if you have the clout. You know, Method Canine, you know, we're meeting at such and such a park today. And social media has been such a blessing to us. So you should be recording everything. You should be making little quick little videos and getting your brand out there with, you know, your little two, 3 minute videos on. I'm going to show you how to put your dog on a leash. Most people think that that's, you know, well, you just clip the dog to the leash and that's it. But, you know, if you have a different spin on it or a way of presenting it, put it out there. Some people like that. They'll watch it. They'll start, you know, following you, and you start building it up that way. There's just so many opportunities in today's day and age with the, you know, the instant way in which we're able to communicate that I really want people to focus less on the financial side of it, because it absolutely will come. So it's really a positive note and not a negative one.
Totally, totally. And as we start talking about, you know, the ins and outs of building this like and scaling this brand and mm-hmm. taking on more clients and all that good stuff, I'll tell you guys, you know, just very candidly, I know Julius, you already know this, but I've kind of learned a lesson myself in these past, what's it been, like 3 months, something
yeah.
like that,
mm-hmm.
that I think my initial thought, because I didn't know, I've never run a business. No one in my family's ever run a business. I'm one of the few people in my family who's graduated high school, okay? So I my thoughts of like a dog training business were like, let's have like a kennel and 50 employees and like, you know, and just this big, big like deal. And, you know, I've run a company. I think at our largest, we had like 6 employees. And, you know, I came to the conclusion a few months ago, like, you know, I think I liked things better when we were smaller. You know, still big enough and busy enough and, you know, and so on to like to make a living, obviously, right? And especially right now, because I've got to support my wife, too, who's going to school. But, you know, once she graduates and is making money on her own and stuff like that, I'm like, I kind of miss managing less and training dogs more.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've really admired about you, is your ability to like do the wear the management hat, because I am so bad at that. And I know it. And honestly, like, I'll be real with you, I'm fine with that. I think I'm more comfortable just training dogs. And I say that because for dog trainers out there who are considering starting a business, I don't think there's anything wrong. Like, if you have the propensity or the team or the whatever to do it, like build this big facility and offer all these different services, like, do, right? Because at the end of the day, the goal is help dogs. And if you can do that, then cool, you're a better business owner than I am. But if you don't want that, don't feel like there's something wrong with that. And there's a smaller version of being like good at business, quote unquote, while being smaller and a little more intimate and a little more like boutique, you know, like little things like making sure that you're you know, active with acquiring local clientele, like you were saying with the donut thing and vet offices and so on. Because something that I found to be a killer for me like years ago was the inconsistency of business. That's what gets you in trouble. And it gets you in trouble in two different ways, because when you're slow, you're like hunting for clients nonstop. And because you were slow for a few weeks or a month, when clients do come in and your business model was to have like, you know, 3-4 board and trained dogs, but because you were slow for a month, you're willing to take on 5 or 6 and try to like make up. And then you're working like crazy for a month, 2 months, and you're just kind of stressed out for 2 months basically. And then you're slow again because you were so busy those 2 months you didn't look for new clients. And it becomes this weird like herky-jerky cycle that doesn't flow well. So I have focused lately on trying to be consistent but with the lower numbers.
Yeah, there's
and not getting too nervous about like taking on more when it comes.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in you know, pacing yourself. And, you know, when we were first starting out, exactly what you said is what we did. You know, where we went from, you know, working 2 or 3 dogs. And I think at one point in time we had, you know, like 28 dogs at one period of time, and we had employees and whatnot. But the reality is that the more you grow, the more expense there is with operating the business. And there's a separate set of stress that comes along with that. So we just had an employee meeting last week. And we are ultra transparent. So when you're talking about the larger number of dogs and the expense of doing everything, you know, where we're at right now, it costs us about $410,000 a year just to operate. Forget about any profit, just to operate. So that's, you know, all of the insurance, the vehicles, the, you know, the building, the maintenance, you know, washcloths. I mean, everything that's associated with the operation of the business. And that's not any profit. That's just that nut number to stay open. That's a lot. And it's, yeah. it's, you know, it's a good problem to have. But in an economy that we're in currently, and, you know, this is becoming more of a luxury thing, there's definitely my eyeball on that, which is another responsibility that, you know, you have somebody in the background. I don't want my wife stressing about that side of it. You know, if so, so again, what specifically to your point, you know, if you're a new trainer and you're going into business and you want to go into business with somebody else and say, look, I want to have a partner in this, having somebody that compliments you on that side. So like people joke around, but they're like, well, my wife always says, well, you need to find yourself a Julius. And this isn't about being self-glorifying, but it's sweet that my wife says that. But I really do handle, I'm that piece for her that can separate and protect her from, you know, having to deal with a lot of that stress, because the stress of dealing with the dogs and making sure that that's perfect is already enough. So, you know, where her expertise is handling that, and that's what's really driving our business, it's really, really valuable to have somebody in the backside that's doing the phone calls, doing the marketing, and doing all those different things that need to be done that brings the business in, so that she can deliver the best service. So again, that balance that we keep going back to is really necessary. So for the trainer that doesn't have a partner, that's brand new to the business, that they're just truly in it by themselves, outlining what your day is going to be and setting yourself up a schedule for success really needs to be the way that it is. And if you say, okay, I have a marketing day, that's the marketing day. And you're not deviating from it, because exactly the problem that you pointed out, Mariano, happens where you're so fixated on getting everything else done that you start missing out on the marketing, you start missing out on the driving the sales, that falls behind. And so you get into this vicious cycle. Well, now I've got I've just finished this round of dogs. I have no new dogs. I've got to rush to find dogs. I'm going to take extra dogs to make up that time. If you're able to pace yourself out better, that's the way to do it. But you cannot miss those opportunities to discuss your brand, to discuss what's going on. So again, having as many people kind of in your back pocket pulling for you, meaning that you don't just go to the local vets. You go... A lot of times people will travel a couple of hours for a service without an issue. So when you take that marketing day, say, I'm going to get up at 6, I'm going to go get my donuts, I'm going to drive around to these 10 veterinarians, and I'm going to get a hold of these rescues and make sure that they know what's going on. I'm going to personally go out there and visit. I'm going to work with a dog in front of them, or I'm going to take a dog from them at no cost and say, hey, look, I'd just like to help you. And then you're putting your name into the hat. So there's a great deal of value in doing that. That's a great point, Mariana, because a lot of people just don't pace themselves, and they're like, well, I'm done with all these dogs. Now I don't have any dogs to deal with, and what do I do? You don't want to be caught in that position.
Yeah, and it's a position I've caught myself in plenty of times. And that's actually when I took on staff. I was like, oh, well, I want to be able to do all these things. And yeah, so it was a super cool realization for me. And I guess I was just saying that, honestly, it was probably a more... what's the word? Like a selfish point of, I've just noticed on my own, I used to think for whatever reason, I can't tell you why now because I can't think of it, but I used to think for whatever reason, like downsizing is bad, or not scaling up is bad.
Yeah.
And, and I think that the more I think about it and the older I get, and, McKenna and I are getting closer to having kids and little stuff like that, where more things are going to need my time than just my business.
And that's what, I'm so sorry. I was going to say, that's why we always tell people when we hire them, your life outside of this business matters. Your life outside of this business is the priority. Because once you start sacrificing those other pieces, what are you working for?
Right.
So.
Well, and I'm actually glad you said that, because the final point that I really wanted to get your thoughts on was, how do you guys go about building the culture of the business at Method Canine?
So, number one thing is we do put our employees first. Regardless of what's going on, we operate in such a way where it's a hard line to walk, because we really do love our employees. Like, we have a personal, heartfelt love for them. And when you have a business like this, and when you're dealing with the stresses that everybody deals with, I think it's super important to have employees that you are personally invested in. And there's a lot of companies out there that say, no, don't do that. You have to have that fine. You they have to produce. That's not life. That's not real. And so in a business like this, where they are caring, they're pouring their emotion and their hard work into the dogs, I think it's very, very important that we prioritize their mental health, that we prioritize their outside life so that they can have time to decompress, they can have time to be able to do that. And so, you know, a lot of businesses, they do the potlucks, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we do that all the time as well. Like every other week, I'm getting coffee and, you know, food. And, you know, I message, you know, one of our employees, I message regularly and say, you know, did you eat breakfast today? Because I know she doesn't. She's got a kid and she's, you know, running around, stuff like that. And I'm like, just be honest with me. And then she'll be like, no, honestly, I didn't. Go out and get her breakfast. Make sure she's got something. And I think that you can show a level of care and consideration that's genuine through making sure that you're taking care of them in that kind of environment. In addition to that, maybe a year or two ago, I don't know how long ago, it's well over a year at this point, but at the end of every one of our cycles, all of our employees get a week to 10 days paid time off so that they've got the opportunity to decompress, go on vacation, visit family, because the company is so demanding. One of our employees, the same one I just referred to about the breakfast, we know that, you know, it costs a lot of money to travel. You know, she drives, I think, 45 minutes or so to work. So as we change our business model, we set her up to work from home and we provide you, you know, all that stuff. And then we're, you know, created programs that she's going to be able to operate strictly from home and be able to do those things so that if she can't come to work, she can still work and that she can have that quality of life. So there's a lot of opportunities in the business to be able to make sure that they understand that they're not just a number, that they actually are valued. And I tell them, and Stephanie tells them regularly as well, that, you know, we love you, want you to be happy and healthy, and, you know, constantly trying to find ways to show that to them. And we've never once, never once spared the dollar. And I know I keep bringing up money, but people work because they need to make money. People work because they want that. And if they're investing into you and they're doing a good job, I think it's a lot of value to say, what do you need? And I do ask them on a daily basis, maybe not daily basis, but multiple times a week, is there anything that you need? Is there anything that you need to make your life better? Anything that you need to make life outside of work better? What do you need? How are things going? You know, and I've been told sometimes, well, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, I've got this bill coming up and, oh, okay, well, how can we help you? Well, okay, well, let's take care of that. Let's make sure you have it. And, you know, and again, this isn't to be self-glorifying, but when we talk about taking care of an employee, when you actually get to the point that you get taken, everybody says it's got to come down to money. And I bring up the money quite a bit, but there's other ways to compensate a staff member in a way that doesn't reflect like having to give cash out or something. And so again, going back, we know you're, you know, a single mom, you know that you're in a position where you, you know, your kid sometimes gets sick and can't go to daycare and stuff. You never have to worry about being fired as a result of that. I mean, I personally, if I was in that position, I would be blown away by that. I don't have to worry. That's a stress I'm not going to have, because I remember one time, you know, that person came to me and was upset about that. I know my son's been, you know, sick multiple times, and, you know, I'm feeling so stressed. Well, let's fix it. Don't worry about that. You're never going to be fired for that. So just don't stress. One of our other employees was out sick for a very long time, months, because they had a surgery and they had a bunch of other stuff that was going on. Don't worry about it. We love you. We care about you. It's all going to be okay. We'll get through it. So, you know, really giving people peace of mind and showing them that you're there for them, it's just so valuable. And a lot of times companies don't do that. A lot of times people say, you know, I didn't leave the company. I left my manager. You know, the company was all right, but I didn't feel appreciated. I didn't feel cared about. I didn't feel like I mattered. And it's huge. And I come from that. So I know what it's like to be in a business where you were just a number. Everything was production based. And even though I had really good numbers, you know, it was a survey based. So you get one crappy survey in, I have no control over this. I did my entire job. I did everything that I was supposed to. And the company made a decision that I had to enact, and that upset the customer. I delivered it well. I did all that stuff, but the customer gives a crappy survey. Well, why'd you get a crappy survey? That kind of stuff is just nuts to me. So right. I'd rather look at the employee and say, I know you're doing the best job you possibly can. We love you. We care about you. And we're going to work through all this. Not to say that there isn't times where you have to, you know, provide critical feedback. And sometimes that feed, you know, we fired people before. But everybody gets a chance. Everybody gets a good chance. And they have to feel valued. So
I love that. So let me kind of unpack that in a way that like resonates to my mind. Okay. So for people who are listening to this, my wife and I got married like five, six months ago, something very recent. And, you know, Julius and I have quickly become good friends, and we talk a lot. And a lot of what we've talked about is just trying to be a good husband. And I know we're talking business, but here's where I draw that correlation. In my mind, you know, people, like, you know, the cliche, like, well, what is love and all that stuff? In my mind, and how I kind of wrote it in my vows was, love is it's a verb. It's a thing you do, right? And you act on it every single day. And that's how you, like, show love to your business, to your company, to your spouse, XYZ. And that's like the vibe I get from you, is you show love to the employees by doing it. Hey, have you eaten today? Here's a, and it can be minor things, right? And that's what everybody says about relationships too, right? It's not like we're, doesn't have to be anything crazy. Just, have you eaten today? Go eat. You know, how's your son doing? All right, go home. He's sick. Go, right? Come back tomorrow. And there's little things like that. And when we talk to Stephanie, she does a similar thing with the business. Like, the business itself. I'm obviously, she loves the employees too, but she was telling us something that made, like, really resonated with me too. She was like, you know, she's in love with making the training better all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so she'll kind of show up one day and be like, okay, we're going to do it like this today. Okay, tomorrow we're going to do it like this now, you know, and little things like that. And it shows in the constant work of it. So if you treat the love of your business and your employees, you know, like a job in a sense, like it's things that you do. I don't just feel love toward my wife. I show it through the acts that I, you know, and so on. Then I think that that's the company culture that I get from Method Canine.
Yeah, I mean, everything, you know, we tell people all the time, regardless of what's going on, what does the evidence say? You know, if you love somebody, the evidence is going to show it. I love my wife, I love my daughter, the things that I do, the way that I act, you know, how I treat them, how I want them to be happy. There's evidence to back all of that up. And so when we tell you tell you're an employee, or you tell anybody in your business, you know, that hey, we care about you. Well, where's the evidence? Well, the evidence is that, you know, we're, you know, providing for you, and not just financially, but that we're asking you, you know, how are you today? You know, we have a girl that works for us who's absolutely lovely. Her name is Ruth, and she does all of our maintenance. She comes in, cleans her kennels. She does just a phenomenal job. She's super reliable, very, very sweet, kind. Her family is just a great family. And I come in and I say, Ruth! And I always yell her name. And she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm like, good. I'm like, what's going on? You got any stories today? And I'll ask her. And is there anything we can do? Oh, no. Do you want something to drink? We buy coffees and stuff. She never wants anything. I did finally find out after months that she loves sweets. So I got her a cookie, and she was like very excited about that. I got her cookies from Starbucks. But the point is that, you know, making sure that she understands that she's cared about in a meaningful way. And that's what it is. I mean, if you know that there's a need that an employee has, and you have the power to meet that need, it doesn't always have to be financial. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go ahead and do it. So, like, you know, our staff, you know, time off for not just illness and stuff like that, but you know, if you know that there's a legitimate need, go do it. So, like, our office manager Carrie, she's got a beautiful granddaughter who lives with her, and just a darling child. And you know, when they were going through a transition period, if she needed time, you know, just do whatever you need to do. You know, let's just take care of it. That peace of mind is so much more valuable to people, and it's so much more real. And I would want that for myself. I don't want to stress out about things. But yeah, everything that we're talking about now goes back to what I said, you know, as far as, like, you know, the second step after you've, you know, decide that you want to be a dog trainer and you get the training, is to test your passion with it, because that's where it comes from. Because if you're like, yeah, I don't know, yeah, I could do this. And if it becomes about the money and that's the focus of it, those extra things that are going to lead you, you know, to greatness in your business and keep your employees, you know, there and keep everybody satisfied and really have, you know, the success that a lot of people want, it comes through the care and consideration. There's nothing greater that we can do for another person than to love them. And I truly believe that if you love someone, that you love them in a meaningful way. That it's not enough to love them in a way that you would love them, but to find out how they need to be loved and meet that need. When you do that with anyone, with anything, greatness comes from that. Peace comes from that. Security comes from that. because they know this person took the time to know me, to know my life, and they are helping me to be a better person. They're helping me to be successful. They're helping me. And it's really like covering those people with that kind of grace that leads them to the point where they're like, I love what I do. I love where I work, and I do not want to leave. And that's huge because, you know, training new employees is very difficult. You know, we've even gotten to the point in our company where we're not, you know, we don't look really for new employees. You know, it's just one of those things where we've got our happy family, we've got that tight-knit, you know, group, and we don't want to disrupt it. And so for somebody to come into that fold, it takes a really special, you know, individual to even be considered, which we actually have somebody right now that we're considering, you know, which is great. But the point is that, you know, once you get to the point where you're operating a business and you're operating outside of just yourself, I really, in a lot of ways, believe that I need to be last and they need to be first. I need to serve them. They need to know that I'm not placing myself on a pedestal above you where I'm the owner, I'm the, you know, that never happens. What can I do to take care of you? And we've always found great success. And even if you don't find great financial success with it, the peace and the happiness that we have from just knowing that we are doing, you know, helpful things and loving things, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
That's awesome, man. That's a mic drop. I don't have nothing else to add. That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I just wanted to recap for people in order to find you guys. It's methodk9 on Instagram, methodk9 on Facebook and YouTube. Mm-hmm. Your email is julius@methodk9.com.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. And is it institute@methodk9.com?
It's Method Canine Institute. That's
Method Canine Institute.
Right.
Sorry.
.com. And that's the learning portal. And that's actually where we'll have everything hooked up for, you know, the new programs that are coming up and the certification programs. And really that the schooling portion that we're going to be providing is going to be able to set people up for success. So you're like, I want to become a dog trainer. I don't know where to begin. We're going to be able to walk you through quite literally every step of the process. And the programs are broken down into three different programs. So there's many different levels of certification. So if you're like, I just want to work with the puppies and the fun stuff and basic obedience, we've got you covered. I want to work with some more, you know, reactivity and stuff, we've got you covered. I want to work with the big cases, we've got covered. And the different levels of certification, the lower levels are stuff you can do just online, but where you're sending us video. I mean, there's a huge thing that you need to do. So it's not like we've looked at all the programs out there. We know what everybody's offering. We know a lot of the certifications are just, you know, answer a couple of questions and here you go. Magically, you're a dog trainer. Right. That's not what we're offering. We're actually going to be proofing what you're doing. We have, you know, different methods so that anybody in the world that wants to, you know, to do this through us and partner with us from this, will be able to do so in a very successful way. And the goal is to get people where they need to be, but actually training in a way that's helpful, training in a way that works, that's proven. There's a reason that people come from all over the world, and anybody can say that they're able to do what my wife and our team are able to do, but I always say it, we have the receipts. The video is there. There's thousands of hours worth of video content. So if you want to be a phenomenal trainer and you've never been in it, yeah, I definitely would want people checking that out. There's a wait list currently, so people can just email me and I'll put them on the wait list for the programming. But we do expect this to launch before the end of the year. And then eventually, you know, somebody could get certified. Like, we have a trainer coming over here in next month, I think, who's going to be our very first true, like, fully high-level Method Canine certified dog trainer. And then she'll be able to tap into our client base. So in her area, she's going to have that region, and then people are going to be able to go to her through us based upon the fact that we know that she knows what to do, how to do it, why to do it. So a lot of value there. Not to plug it too much, Mariano. You've been so kind with your time today.
No, I watched it. That's kind of what I was getting at here. Is there anything else you want to bring attention to right now?
Really, you know, if there's anything somebody needs, if they have a question, a comment, or concern when it comes to this business, you know, we're happy to answer it. You know, there's nothing greater that we can offer to anybody than that high level care and consideration. It comes from our genuine desire to help people. It primarily comes from our faith. And so, you know, if somebody needs some encouragement, really on any stretch, you know, in life. If you need some encouragement, you want to reach out to us, if you found any of this that we talked about to be uplifting in any way, even if it's not done with dog training, you know, if it's got nothing to do with any of that, you know, we love helping people, love being kind to people, and just loving everyone. So, yeah, reach out.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. This has been Season 3, Episode 5, Interview with Julius Vichinsky of Method Canine. Love you, brother. Thanks again.
Love you, too. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.